I'm James Baker, and earlier I had a conversation with the pianist Ana Cervantes, no stranger to San Antonio, though it has been a while since she last gave a recital here, regarding her series of commissions for pieces of music prompted by the various artistic visions of the Mexican writer and photographer Juan Rulfo. The project eventually yielded 23 compositions, mostly in miniature. The central focus was Rulfo's short novel, Pedro Páramo, though, as Ana previously explained, some of the contributors related their scores to Rulfo's collection of short stories, The Burning Plain, or to his photographs. Ana, I'm curious how you described your current project, again involving a group of composers, to those from whom you solicited participation. The new project, I should say, is called Song of the Monarch, Women of Mexico. Whereas the Rulfo project did have that general focus of Pedro Páramo, the Monarca project seems to me to be much broader.
You're absolutely right. And I thought a lot about that aspect, actually. That, I mean, the Rulfo project was, I don't want to say limited or confined, but yeah, I like your word focused. It had a much narrower focus in that sense, just talking about Rulfo's work, which, of course, just per se is extensive and has great depth. But yeah, here with the next commissioning project, which obviously the bug had really bitten me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who would do something like this twice in a row? Only a crazy person. I had this idea about women in Mexico. And, you know, I talked about it with some of the composers, and they thought it was a good idea, and that for me is really the barometer, you know. If the composers feel that it's a good sort of creative fount of creative inspiration, well, then that works. But yes, it's true. I left it very, very open. Wiser heads than mine said to me that I should have been stricter, and I probably should have assigned a particular muse, as it were, to each composer. But I just couldn't see doing that. You know, I felt that it would be too limiting. And, you know, how was I going to know what would be the best composer muse match, you know? And so I left that open. I just asked for a piece of between 6 and 8 minutes duration, inspired in some woman in Mexico, and that woman could be a historical figure or a figure of myth and legend. She could be someone alive right now or someone who had lived during any time in Mexico's history. She could also be someone who was born elsewhere, who then came to Mexico to find her personal and in some cases, artistic home in Mexico. So this is covering a huge amount of ground. Nevertheless, I am still convinced that I made the right decision to let each composer pick his or her muse, because they picked really interesting ones,
mm-hmm.
for one thing. And for another thing, one of the extraordinary aspects of this project is that each composer really developed a completely singular and unique relationship with a given muse. Even though there are several composers who pick the same muse, as one might imagine, as a number of people, several people, picked Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz. Several composers picked Malinche. But you know, all the different Sor Juana pieces are so different. And all the Malinche pieces are so different. So that really singular relationship between each composer and the particular muse chosen is one of the most, to me, really most precious aspects of this project.
Tell me about the name of the project, Cantos de la Monarca Mujeres de México.
Well, it's a long story, but I'll give you the capsule version. I picked the monarch butterfly as sort of the emblem of this project because the more I thought about it, it was suggested by a friend of mine, actually, a Mexican friend who's now at UT Dallas, who's a political scientist with the soul of a poet. And he, when he suggested the title, he didn't suggest a title bit, he suggested the monarch butterfly as kind of the emblem for this project. And he didn't actually talk about it in terms of women. He talked about it in terms of Mexico and the world. You know, he said the monarch butterfly leaves its sanctuary here every year, and every year finds its way back to the sanctuary, to its sanctuary here in the state of Michoacán. And he said, and every year the monarch butterfly comes back here with the dust of the world on its wings. And I thought that was so beautiful. And so, and it really rang, you know, it just rang true with me, the way things that are right ring true, you know, in one's soul. And so then I said, okay, this really convinces me. I just need to find, you know, more ways of how it hooks into the project. And so I began reading more about the monarch butterfly. And, you know, the more I read about the monarch butterfly, the more it seemed to me that the monarch butterfly is not only a symbol of Mexico and its relationship with the rest of the world, it's also an extraordinarily powerful metaphor for all of these women, because the monarch butterfly is an incredible symbol of tenacity and valor in this seemingly fragile body. So that was how I picked that name for the project.
So now you've commissioned these pieces and they begin to arrive, I guess one by one, and you open the envelope and see a score you've never seen before. What then? How do you begin to understand what the composer's intentions are? And more importantly, how do you begin to allow your own invention to intersect? I guess what I'm asking is, how do you come to your interpretation?
I think, for me at least, as an interpreter, always based on the score, with the score always there as the primary document, I have to get inside that music. You know, I have to get inside what the composer is trying to say with those ink blotches on the page, you know? And so out of what become my I guess I can say convictions about this piece of music come, you know, myriad hundreds of thousands of decisions, large and small, about phrasing, about dynamics, about architecture, about impulse, about you know, shape, color, all sorts of things, which are, I think, part of that process of preparing an interpretation, and which then, because in this case we're dealing with living composers, which then, once I have put together what feels to me like a convincing interpretation, you know, then through the marvels of digital technology, I can record it on my little homebrew recording device and put it up on Dropbox, you know, and that way the composer can listen to it and give me feedback. And I guess I should add also that this is a kind of evolutionary process. In the case of Monarca, because I couldn't raise money immediately to record, I just decided I'm gonna live with this music and really develop interpretations over time, which is something you can only really do over time, you know. As an old colleague of mine at Mason Gross at Rutgers in New Jersey once said, he said, time does something to music that nothing else can do. And there's such wise words and so true. And so I just decided to really bring time to that music. I memorized several of the pieces on the first disc, and I'm actually in the process of memorizing three of the ones that I'll record on the second disc in July. And so the music evolves. You know, I suppose my imprint as interpreter evolves time with the input of the composer, with further examination of the score, with, in some cases, memorizing. And it's a process which is both fragile and durable and very rarely frustrating, occasionally frustrating, but very rarely, and enormously gratifying. Because it is, you know, it's sort of the second stage of that bringing new music to life we started out talking about.
As Bob Dylan so famously sang, the times they are a-changin', and nowhere more than in the brave new world of funding creative projects. Anna, I've watched as your Monarca project has evolved, and as you've learned some lessons, sometimes hard lessons, about fundraising. How has the experience been?
I'm sure that I do not have as many words of wisdom to say about crowdfunding as does Amanda Palmer, for example, who, incidentally, I admire greatly. I mean, I find her an enormously eloquent and articulate spokeswoman for the arts in general. And, geez, you know, she went on Kickstarter and raised $1 million to finance this next album or couple of albums of hers. I had a, you know, what felt at the time like a really miserable failure on Kickstarter. Of the $3,500 we raised, I didn't see a dime because we didn't make our goal. And that at the time was very, very frustrating, and I'm sure that part of it was the combination of that plus just not making any headway at all with institutional fundraising. And, of course, that was because the entire world was in the grip of this terrifying financial crisis where nobody dared to move an inch, you know, because they didn't know if they were going to still have health insurance or be able to pay their own employees or, you know, whatever. I mean, it was just, it was at all levels, and it was terrifying for everyone. So there was a point at which I, feeling like a total failure at fundraising, just decided that I was gonna leave it. And in fact, I had to do something which was terribly, terribly upsetting and anguishing for me. I had to ask the composers to donate their work, which was just for me like, I don't know, like throwing myself off a bridge or something. It was terrible. I'm incapable of asking anybody to play or write for free. I think it's just dreadful. But it was what I had to do to save the project, because that was the composer honoraria were 50%, were slightly over 50% of the whole budget. So it was a horrible, horrible moment. But I have to say that none of the composers rebuked me. None of them complained. All of them said things like, if I were Minister of Culture, you'd have a lifetime grant. But since I'm not, you just have my lifelong love. That was what one composer said. And so I suppose from that point of view, it just goes to show you that number one, never say never. And number two, have faith in yourself and what you do. And number three, you know, keep trying. Keep trying, keep trying. Never give up. Because look what happened, you know. Just last year in August, this opportunity came up with Conaculta, within the Mexican government, and I applied, and I didn't get all I asked for, but I got pretty much enough to record this music. So, in a way, you know, that emblem which I chose for the project of tenacity and bravery and perseverance turned out to be absolutely the right emblem for the project in more ways than I could have known at the beginning.
Well, Anna, I for one am thankful for your tenacity and for everything you do in prompting new music to be written. And I can't wait to hear and see the final two-disc fruition of Song of the Monarch, Women of Mexico. It will be coming in the fall.
You should have yours by mid-September.
And then to the marketplace a little later. Anna, thank you so much for taking the time to tell us about this and your other projects, and good luck.
Thank you. You too, James, and best of luck with everything. Keep me posted, okay?
Oh, I certainly will.